You're listening to Connecting Faith. I always appreciate the opportunity to connect with Leith Anderson. Leith serves as president of the National Association of Evangelicals, and he's been a longtime pastor at the Wooddale Church in Eden Prairie, Minnesota for 35 years, written a number of books, and speaks widely, teaches at seminaries and universities. And we have the opportunity to get together every other week to talk about faith, culture, and the church. And Leith, it's good to have you back on with us. This previous few minutes, we've been talking about domestic violence. This is the month of awareness, and sadly, it's a pretty sobering reality. And I was just thinking in the light of maybe revelations about Hollywood mogul Harvey Weinstein that the country seems to be a little more attuned to the reality of sexual assaults. And just wondering if you as a pastor, if you have advice to pastors in their churches what to do if they hear about an assault, or just to address it.
Yeah, I'm saddened by it. There's just so many stories and statistics of those who have suffered domestic violence at home or sexual harassment or assault at work. It's kind of uncomfortable to say that there may be a positive side to this, and that is that these issues are coming out of the shadows and into the light. So I've thought about this. What can pastors, what can churches do? So let me give you some quick bullet points. A pastor should talk about this in a sermon, but probably not just a sermon, but periodically, because if the pastor and the church are knowledgeable and compassionate and are comfortable addressing these difficult issues, that sort of gives permission to people in the congregation to talk about it as well. Next is to provide safe people and safe places for those who are victims and publicize that, where to go, what to do, inside the church and out. Another is to make women counselors and friends available, because most pastors are men and most victims are women, and women who are victims of violence from men are often reluctant to talk to a male pastor or counselor, so having trained women available is really important. A couple more. One is to plan ahead. In other words, don't wait until the issue arises in a crisis, but think through if somebody is a victim of domestic violence and they need a place to stay, have a home or several homes ready and available, or a setup with a motel where the bill can be sent to the church, or how to call the police. Talk to the police about it before so you know who the officer is. You don't want to figure this out in the midst of the crisis. And finally is to confront perpetrators. One of the frequent themes of current news is that people knew what was going on and they never said anything. So the church and pastors need to speak up and confront those who assault and, when necessary, call the police.
It's, as you said, it's a sobering issue and one that, thankfully is maybe coming more to the surface. And it would be wonderful if churches could lead the way in being those safe places and a place where they can talk about it. So appreciate those good insights.
Yes, Leith, another tragic story, of course, that has taken place since we last spoke with you was the mass shooting in Las Vegas, a nation being rocked by that. And after much speculation about a motive, we're still waiting to hear exactly what motivated this guy to do such a terrible thing. Does knowing the motive help us heal or grieve, or does it bring closure for us, do you think?
It does. We always want to know why. We want to know why when there's a crime or when there's cancer, even a career change. We like to know in order to figure it out. And in some cases, with a criminal case, going to trial, motive's important. But I think when we think about this theologically, we need to remember that there are a lot of answers that we don't have. Whether it's that Malaysian Airlines Flight 370, that it disappeared, and we don't know why. We don't know where it is. We just don't know. And that's when we trust God for the things that we don't know. I'm going to risk upsetting some people saying this, but I frequently hear folks say, when I get to heaven, I'm going to know all the answers. I'm going to find out when I get to heaven. And I'm not so sure about that. That when we get to heaven, we don't become God. We don't become all-knowing about everything. And in heaven, we will have the same opportunity that we have here on earth, and that is to trust the God who knows even if we don't know. We just need to trust God for things that he may never let us find out.
When you were pastoring or have opportunity to speak in situations like this, when there are major crises, did you find yourself maybe going back to one message or one text or one thing that you wanted to make sure that congregation understood?
There's an old story, Neil, about a school bus driver who stalled his bus on railroad tracks, and he was able to get most of the children off the bus, but not in time for his own children and himself. And he and his children died. And then in that small town, people blamed his wife. So she's not only grieving the loss of her husband and children, but somehow the blame has been put on her. And the story goes that someone sent her a telegram that said, "Remember, God is too wise to ever make a mistake and too kind to ever do anything cruel." You know, that's a good but a difficult message in times of tragedy. And I may never use those specific words, but I always try to call people to the message that God is good and God really does care. And while we may not understand even our own pain, the truth is that God is on our side. And that's the message when it's the World Trade Center or when the Minneapolis Bridge collapsed or when a child dies or when there's a dreaded diagnosis, that we are Christians who turn to God in our fears and desperation, and we believe that God is always there for us. It's a never-ending message.
As you said, we all want to know why. Did you find yourself trying to come up with that answer or maybe counteract that desire that we want to know why and change the question?
I have the same desire as everybody else, that I want to know why. I think a lifetime of being a pastor is the recognition that sometimes we find out and sometimes we don't. Also, there are circumstances where finding out why may not be a good thing. Sometimes that adds to the pain. So I'm not sure that I have quite as high a need to have that question answered. I'm not somehow idealizing my faith in God as greater than others, but I just am convinced that this should drive us to the God who knows even when we don't.
That's a good word. We're talking with Leith Anderson, the president of the National Association of Evangelicals here on Connecting Faith. We're just a couple weeks away, Leith, from October 31st, Reformation Day, and it's the big 500th anniversary, of course, this year of that, when Martin Luther nailed the 95 Theses to the door and wanted to debate. What should we know about Luther and the start of Protestantism?
Luther was amazing, 500 years, and the Protestant Reformation that started with him and with Luther, and not just Luther, but Calvin and Zwingli and others, that's been used by God as a movement that, well, hasn't stopped for five centuries. That it was time for reform in the church. And we need to remember that reform isn't something that just happened 500 years ago. We need constant reform. And what Luther did is he called us back to the Bible, and that should be our anchor for continual reform of Christians in the church. He called us to the priesthood of every believer, that we all have direct access to God, and that salvation is by faith and not by works. There are other aspects of the Reformation, but those are sort of the pillars, the anchors, the fence posts of what the Reformation was all about and the difference that it's made.
Leith, I know we talked at the beginning of the month. It's Clergy Pastor Appreciation Month, and we chatted about that a little bit last time. But I'd heard from a pastor recently who is serving a rural church. He's retired, but still serving rural churches part-time because there aren't enough pastors to fill the pulpits. Seminary costs have created a barrier for young aspiring pastors with student loans to take on rural churches. Just curious, maybe as your role in leadership at the NAE, is there a solution to what's happening maybe in rural pulpits today?
Yeah, it's not just rural pulpits. It's other places as well. And there is no one solution. I mean, some churches will merge or close. Some pastors will become bivocational. Some will serve two or three congregations. Some rural churches are becoming mega churches. There are a number of mega churches in small communities across America. But what we need to recognize is that organizations and institutions, they change. They all do. And churches aren't exempt. Let me give you an interesting stat on that. In 1942, there were over 108,000 school districts in the United States. 60 years later, in 2002, there were 13,000 school districts. That is over 95,000 school districts in the United States, either closed or consolidated. They mostly consolidated. But we have more students now than we did in 1942. So the structures change. They merge. They expand. They make these changes. And it's the same way with the church. It's not just the church, it's gas stations and grocery stores and car dealerships and lots of other organizations. So these changes are admittedly difficult for individuals and local congregations, but the Church of Jesus Christ in America is doing just fine, and that includes rural areas as well.
Good word.
That's good. You know, one last quick question for you, Leith. Relief efforts are continuing in Mexico and Southeast Texas, Florida, the Caribbean, and now even the British Isles a little bit, too, because of hurricanes and other disasters. How do we maintain our interest and our prayer concern, even our financial support, when this is no longer front page news?
Yeah, it's easy to forget about yesterday's news when today's news grabs our attention. And some of these disasters are so great, we're just so overwhelmed that we need to escape. So what do we do? Well, not everything. We should choose one disaster, maybe like Puerto Rico. That's a place where I have family connections. So choose one relief agency to give to. It might be World Relief or World Vision or Salvation Army. And maybe choose one church to help or one family to pray for. So we can't do everything, but what that means is sometimes we do nothing. So it's better to say, what is the one thing that we can do, and then trust God to recruit other people to do it in other instances where we can't. Mm-hmm.
Good words today from Leith Anderson. I always appreciate the opportunity to reflect on some of the big issues and concerns facing our culture and how God's people and the church can respond. Leith serves as president of the National Association of Evangelicals. You can find out more about their great work, nae.net. And Leith, blessings to you. Looking forward to our next conversation. Thanks so much.
Great. Always good to be with you.